basically how everything works now. Just looking for something out of nothing. Like, yep. With all this, you know, the way that the Mayweather and McGregor freaking press conferences were analyzed. Like, well, you know, oh, was he being racist when he said dance to me, boy? And, like, you know, calling him a faggot,
What blows my mind about that is that no one has come out and said that this is obviously staged.
I feel like people like have.
They very clearly have rehearsed their lines. Otherwise, there's no way that Conor McGregor would just, like, spontaneously call a black person boy.
Well, he is from Ireland. It's not, doesn't have the same connotation it does here.
Well, so was he retarded?
Well, no, remember...
remember, like, oh, by the way, in America, like, you can't talk, say bad things about black people.
Didn't Stephen Adams get in trouble for saying something like that? The guy from the Oklahoma City...
He said that someone was hanging off his back like a monkey. Which, I mean, monkeys do hang on things. That's a lot different than calling someone a monkey.
Yeah,
like, that's... But that's where we've arrived to now, is it just even just saying that word. Like, I heard that word. I don't care about the context in which it was used or whatever.
You see, apparently they're sharing a private jet to and from all these promotions.
I see headlines like that, I almost feel like even that's fake news. Or all this stuff comes out that McGregor got knocked out by his sparring partner. Like, I don't believe any of it because I haven't seen any of it.
I care way more about UFC 214 than I do about this stupid fight.
Yeah. Jones Cormier, man.
It's the ultimate curiosity because either way, I don't think it's going to be a great fight. But the fact that it's $100 because a lot of people just want to see what is going to happen. Like, because I believe this whole thing's a big sham too. But there's also potential that it isn't. McGregor's just trying to get paid. They're selling a fight, or whether or not even Mayweather. I mean,
15-0, McGregor gets a fat paycheck and they just walk away.
That's the ultimate ending I'm thinking of, but I also was the asshole that lost $1,200 on the Pacquiao fight, so...
I don't think McGregor will ever fight again after this fight.
I don't think he has any reason to. I mean, like...
He's already done all he needs to do, and he doesn't want to get
I don't know if you can
up.
Turn off whatever he has.
Yeah, you can.
You probably can, yeah. He's got a daughter now, and he's...
contradicted yourself within 10 seconds.
Well...
Let's play it through.
Well, think about it. Just think about how the gusto that he does everything with right now.
Do you think that he'll ever fight again after this fight?
I could easily see it just because of his demeanor.
Do you think he will or not? Yes.
How old is he?
Yeah. But I could see, like I said, I actually expect that.
28 or 9.
20 or 29. He's going to have that money.
I expect him to continue fighting, but I can see a world where he's just like, yeah, I did. I played everybody. I got all the money.
You can lose that desire, though, with that much money. Like, what's your drive at that point when you, like, It's why the band's second album always isn't very good. It's the first album they spent their whole life up to that point getting itself into, and this, you know, now you have some fame and success. You're gonna
third album usually kicks ass
because you need to avenge yourself from the second album. But I don't know.
And you get back to your roots. You're Rocky III-ing. You're doing what J. Cole did in this third album.
J. Cole sucks. Born to Run was a third album.
In his book he described it as the same thing, a homecoming kind of. I could see McGregor being driven not by money. I don't give a fuck about the money. I'm here to kick everyone's ass to be the best. 100%
about the money.
But I could see him being obsessed with the character that he has become, and just making a livelihood off that. I could see him going to Hollywood. He clearly likes his attention, but I could see him. If they were going to give Ronda Rousey a fucking movie, I think that Conor McGregor can earn himself an appearance.
Read interviews with people close to him that said that his plan was always to just use fighting as a springboard. He's never really been seriously injured in a fight.
Unless you're super passionate about it, then I think that's the way to go about it.
There's no reason to be.
Yeah.
I mean, there are the people. I mean, put it this way: there are the people that are good at fighting that don't like getting into fights.
We were talking earlier at breakfast.
Yeah. Kind of like what we were talking about, that specifically. The people that, you know, they, with sports in general, there are some people that don't like what they do, they just are good at it, but they do it because they can. Like, some people legitimately like to fight.
Yeah.
I saw some interview where someone said that most NFL players don't even like football.
Oh, yeah, they totally don't.
It was like a recent interview, like a player said this in the last couple of weeks.
It's such a harrowing lifestyle. I mean, like.
Yeah, it's terrible. When we lived outside of Portland, my dad had the same accountant as Joey Harrington. Remember him?
His
name got brought up this morning. Already.
Well, he said that Joey never really gave a shit about football.
He's
doing it for the money.
It's such hard work. I mean, if you're one of these superstars, I'm sure there's a good time. And if you're just a run-of-the-mill player every year, wondering if you're going to make the squad or not, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. You're making
those guys probably like it more.
You're making a good living, but the fact that you're working out as much as you are and doing that, at least, you know, if you actually want to be good at it, if you don't have that much ability, it's not a fun. You know, like
grueling.
I remember hearing Drew Brees saying something that, you know, there's a certain degree of loneliness that's associated with greatness.
Yeah.
Like, that you actually have to...
It's like Kobe Bryant in the gym. doing.
He wasn't letting me shoot in the gym.
Yeah, right. you could have your. I mean, depending on position you play, I think the wide receivers and D backs probably would be okay. But if you're in the box, you know, you're also know that you have to work this much harder, and that also that 15 years from now is not going to be a fun time.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He's some 60 or 70 number. It's easy to brush over those guys, and just the amount of work you're putting in, how much of your life you're dedicating to being great at it, and just what you're getting out of it.
That's why these guys should I don't really care for the whole forced amateurism shit in school, but they should have another skill. A lot of these guys retire from the NFL and they're just like illiterate or like, you know, legally retarded. It's like
they've made horrible businesses. I mean, if football kind of became the boxing thing. Boxing, you know, was the biggest sport for a while because it was getting people out of bad situations kind of thing. That's a lot of football. Where
the thing about football players is they don't make that much money.
No, in the grand scheme of things, they
especially
don't.
Especially when they're like...
On that scale. When they think that they make that much money is also another problem.
They make it up front.
Well, they don't make it up front, but they're around people who do have a lot of money. Like, if you're a kid, if you're like an NFL rookie, and you're making like $2 million this year, and two lockers down is maybe DeMarcus Ware, who's making, you know, $20 million... The $2 million goes pretty quick when you're hanging out with other millionaires.
Oh, yeah, also, DeMarcus Ware knows he's probably going to have a job next year. You don't. With other
right.
sports, at least you know you have a certain amount of hardy built-in equity and all that. With football, every year, you're playing to survive.
They don't understand, like, investing their money.
Like, when they
spend it.
Right.
That's tough. When they had the whole lockout thing for a while, like they're saying,
yeah.
The players are going, like, there's
living paycheck to paycheck.
I mean, there's players that can't go without a game check. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
They literally.
They hear, I have $2 million, and they think, I could spend $2 million. It's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, they can't.
But no one's ever sat them down and been like, you need to prepare for your future. Like, $2 million is enough to realistically live for, like, 20 to 30 years after you retire if you live within your means. Like,
but there's,
like,
this, there's, like, this, there's some guys that get it. Like, I mean, like, two examples that stand to me are, like, are the Kawhi Leonards and the Nnamdi Asamoah things where they were still driving the cars they had in college to
right.
practice even though they
yeah.
had those. And it's one of those things, damn if you do, damn if you don't, because when somebody freaking, when one of those guys is driving, you know, their 97 Sentra or whatever it was, he could look at being making so much money, why does he buy a new car? But if he shows up in a fucking Rolls Royce, it's going, oh, he's just careless with his money. Like, there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant by up front. You're not getting money immediately.
The thing about, like, money and sensible investing is that it's not a public opinion thing.
No, yeah.
Like,
no,
Kawhi Leonard's driving that thing all the way to the bank with a grin on his face.
But just like the habit of spending a few million dollars, just like DeMarcus Ware and other players like that do, it's just one of those things that, like, you know, unless you're surrounded by people that are already smart / looking out for you, and or you already have an education and understand, you do kind of live as if you're getting just money up front and this money's going to last forever. I've never seen this money before, but this is what I get to do with $2 or $3 million.
Well, I mean, with
right, but I mean, some people at age 25
willfully ignorant.
I mean, sure, you can put some of the blame at their feet, but
bro, I'm 25 and I understand the NFL player's success
right.
is fleeting.
Do you think you have maybe surrounded yourself or have been surrounded by people that are, I don't know, positive influences on you or people that might not be just money grabs?
I learned
or,
about the NFL and its players, I learned myself pretty much.
Right.
They could learn it.
I'm saying area matters, the environment.
Look, if the grand scheme of things, if you're saying that those people are at a disadvantage because of the people they surround themselves with, like, that's a very low bar to be
set. The people that they were born surrounded by sometimes.
Oh, so they can't go out.
No, they can't.
It sounds like you have a very low expectation for these people.
No, I'm not saying the opposite of the whole bootstraps thing either. But, like, there's, in any town, there's families that are just like, oh, wow, these, I don't know, just there's groups of people that are individuals as well. Just, you can kind of point them out if you go to a bar or a restaurant and be like, all right, yeah, these people are all wearing flannel to this nice restaurant and they're acting kind of sloppy and they're just doing. You can kind of say, like, oh, this guy's probably not getting the best financial advice. And you can kind of lay some of it at his feet because, yes, there is the internet and you can Google everything. But
financial
it's just
advisors, libraries.
But they never have that push. That
free college courses online.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Well,
that all exists and it's all out there. But unless you're pushed to do that or you have – or you've been, you know, made aware.
Why can't they push themselves?
Because for 20-something years, that they just have the same,
they
just drink Mountain Dew and talk about
that. No,
but
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, I get what you're saying with that, but then also, you're just born away or you're not. It's kind of the same thing how, like, you know, I have a fuck-up, you know, I have an asshole brother. grew up in the same house and in the same circumstances like that. Why is it that he has, you know, not have the responsibilities that I do, kind of thing like that? Like, there is a certain degree of that. We're both surrounded. Like, sometimes you just can't fix certain things. And, like, I was going with this, like, I went with the guy with Kawhi, because I don't even know if Kawhi is smart, because you have to be having a unique personality, I think, to be thinking where you could be the star of the NBA if you want to, Kawhi, and you don't. I don't even know anything about you. I've maybe heard you say a few sentences here and there. Like, but I don't know.
Welcome,
I assume he's smart because he, you know, but maybe he's just basketball smart. You know, like, I don't know. I don't
think you can be basketball
smart.
Smart
enough to save his money.
Smart enough to save his money. Yep. And he's improved dramatically under. Like, I don't think you can get that much better and apply yourself and have that level of discipline while being not a smart player. I don't know. What's a dumb person with a good high football IQ or a smart baseball
IQ? A lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's like.
Pete Rose had a high baseball IQ, and that guy's like retarded.
Probably definitely is. But I mean no, they're.
They throw him on TV still.
Yeah.
Because he's Pete Rose.
Well, that was a whole thing, too. Like, I remember Maddox in an interview, and they asked him, you know, he's like, people think I'm some kind of genius. He's like, I barely graduated high school.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, kind of. He's like, but I just.
I know where to put the ball.
I think, yeah, I mean, like, pretty much every like, you know, middle linebacker, I feel like it is.
Lamar Arrington always comes to mind for me.
Yeah, he didn't even know what he was doing. It's just go around out there and make plays. Kind of.
Yeah.
There are some guys that, I mean, to be a middle linebacker, most of the time, like, being one of these tackle machines, you basically recognize the play the way that a hitter in baseball recognizes a fastball. That's how much you have that window where you can just look and just, you know, you see where the play is going. And then to be able to just instinctually flop to the ball all the time like that. There's a football IQ to that. I doubt that they actually know the actual.
Pretty much reading the quarterback's eyes on the line.
Put it this way, not all of them go up to become defensive coordinators afterwards because they don't know what they're doing. They just kind of have the sense for the game.
What about, like, raising the bar a little bit? Professional athletes, I'm with that. Like, there are guys that can.
You just can't make
have applied skills. I'm just saying, for, like, if you're Kawhi Leonard and you have an offense and a defense, the whole team is designed around you. Or if you're Russell Westbrook, like, I think. That goes beyond the just applied skills that you learn just by kind of being around it, even if you're not learning other things outside of basketball or football or whatever. Like, just being a quarterback.
He's not broken. He can't even read.
Right? No. But it's not the same as being a quarterback or being the guy with the ball in your hands and being.
You can learn, though. Floyd Mayweather always wanted to be rich. So you know what he did? He learned how to become rich.
But this is the whole thing. I wonder what's going back to this is. How much even validity there is to that IRS story, or why that is? Like, if that is the case, why have you not paid that? Like, you know, maybe he's
an idiot.
He's rich, but he still does all the things wrong with money. He just has this ability to just keep making money, which helps him out because he potentially could be broke with all the money he's already earned in his life.
Yeah,
because he'll post his. I mean, the whole thing about his
$100 million checks he hasn't cashed yet, allegedly.
Well, you know, those things expire after so many days, you know. You have to call them up.
Get them reissued.
But,
yeah, Floyd, I mean, there's guys that have pissed away a ton of money.
You know, here's the thing, if you cash
one of those... kind of circling around that whole thing right now.
If you cash one of those checks, you could be earning some interest on it, you know, just saying, like, in a very, very low-risk investment.
Well, that's what the thing about Floyd is that the IRS came calling, he said, I have all this money, but it's liquid, it's too
illiquid.
It's
not liquid. Liquids you can already have.
What do you think you learn from somebody, like a celebrity or an athlete, when you hear like Wesley Snipes with the IRS, or just like a random celebrity football player, you're like, oh wow, they owe millions of dollars.
Got arrested because he didn't pay his taxes. That's why I ended up in Alcatraz.
There are guys that have actually tried to make savvy investments and have just gotten fleeced or worked over, like Antoine Walker. You know what happened with that one? Like,
yeah.
he invested in some apartment building in Chicago. That he didn't understand the language of or whatever, and this thing went to shit. He didn't know about it.
You got to educate yourself.
But then, I mean, even Kurt Schilling lost all his money investing
in
video games,
being stupid.
But I mean, it was pitched to him as a good idea, and it was like he was trying to do something. It's one thing if a person loses like $1 million in, you know, in a night of gambling, but when you lose $30 million, I mean,
if you're running a scam, what's the most important thing to have? A good salesman. That Schilling got pitched.
Get Saul Goodman up in there.
I know enough about video games to know there's like 3 video game studios that make like 90% of the games. It's virtually impossible as like an indie studio to have a hit.
Yeah.
And the odds are just against you. The return's not that high.
But yeah.
The return just isn't there. So like, he should have known that. But he probably got pitched by a really good salesman.
I guess their arrogance is why they don't. If they, you know, they got a feeling, or you know, they can't be scammed. There's obviously that feeling of arrogance. You have to have a certain thing or something to make it that high of a level of sports. But
It's ego, easy to play somebody's ego against them, especially an athlete or a celebrity. You're just like, hey, you know what you're talking about, right? You like this. Your gut feeling says you like this, right?
I forgot who I was listening to. They kind of brought up this whole point with, you know, the whole saga of OJ kind of came back up, like with, you know, the whole robbery thing. And apparently the guys that he was with, you know, didn't want to actually go up to the room and do all that. But it's like, okay, O.J. Simpson, like, the way that he played and the way he ran, like, he's that type of guy that, no, well, I'm going to go full steam ahead on this one. Like, that's how...
I'm O.J.
That's how I've always been. That's, you know, like, I mean, that's probably what drives you to have a murderer's mentality, allegedly.
That was a pretty interesting little clip last night on SportsCenter when they were talking to some inmates that have spent a good amount of time around him in the past, like, 8 or 9 years. And, like, hey, in your opinion, has O.J. changed at all? No, he still thinks he's larger than life.
I just had an interesting...
It was the general consensus of those guys that they showed at least
Kane should have turned him out.
I just actually just had an idea, but maybe it could even feed into this worse. Between his professional career and his post-career, is it possible that O.J. Simpson is one of the most covered athletes and most, like, seen on TV athletes ever? Because think about it, he was also an actor for a while.
Yeah.
He was a broadcaster. Then his whole freaking murder trial, then the post murder trial and the civil suit, that just dominated for all this time. Then
you
he's
mean,
been
like,
back again.
Former professional athlete, or high level athlete.
All the content that's been made about O.J. Simpson, I feel like he might be the most, like,
mentioned athlete, covered
I'm
athlete.
I'm trying to think of, like, you know, as far as his effect on American culture.
Probably him or Gerald Ford.
Athlete?
Gerald Ford was an All American center at University of Michigan.
Okay, well,
but how? I think especially right now,
Nixon definitely shaped
years.
American society.
I'm not saying it's part shape, but I'm saying he's been the most covered with this thing of media. The amount of articles that have written about him, the amount of documentaries.
You're just talking pure athlete, that's probably.
And then it's also from his entire career.
Gerald,
like,
Ford's kind of a technicality.
He's been on the tip of every American's tongue for as long. Like, everybody, as old as the oldest person, and, like, you know, as young as 10 years old, know who O.J. Simpson is.
It's funny that people our age know him as a murderer, and people who are, like, 20 years older know him as a football player.
Well, I mean, he's always going to be those, but...
He is a murderer.
He is, actually. I mean, if you actually watched him, and all this thing that sucks is that, yeah, he wasn't one of the best running backs ever.
Yeah. That doesn't mean
possibly one of the best. Oh, no, definitely not.
Jim Brown, great running back, shitty boyfriend.
That's actually hilarious. In George Carlin's book, he's talking about one story about being at a party. And he says about Jim Brown, he's like describing people at the scene, he's like, Jim Brown was there, and he was angry about something as usual.
Yep. I just want to know how many more times he can beat his girlfriend before the NFL results from him.
See, like, that's kind of what, like, I mean, I wasn't condoning it, but, like, when things happen recently, this new change in the guard of, like, you know, like, how to handle, if you have domestic violence, you throw it out of the league almost at these points and everything.
Which is, I think, good.
Which, well, no, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but, like, I just need to know what the precedent was where, I mean, they said that about O.J., but, you know, he was inducted in the Ring of Honor, but he was still, you know, had domestic charges and stuff back then.
He should not be in that Ring of Honor.
It used to be, it wasn't until we
Honor.
Actually...
Yeah.
It wasn't... Oh, don't even start on the Bills fans now. This is the one that's killing me. Did you see that fucking whole thing about the Stephon Gilmore?
The whole thing with the Stephon
Gilmore?
Where
like
he between...
Spray painted, like, the N-word on his car or something.
No. Stephon Gilmore, the news broadcaster. And every Bills fan's loving this.
What?
Because Stephon Gilmore tweeted out, like, my people finally get to see me on TV. Like, and then it was hashtag Patriots Nation, hashtag it's about that time.
You want to pull it up?
No.
So the freaking this Bills guy going, well, this is what your people missed, and they showed, like, all the bad plays, like a couple of bad plays that he made in his 5-year career in Buffalo, and it's just like they're like everyone's going, oh yeah, fuck that. It's like I just hate the Bills fans' attitude where when players are in Buffalo, they're the most overrated players ever, and then when they leave Buffalo, they become like, oh, they were terrible anyway.
Well, this whole thing was centered around a tweet that Stephon. Do you see that tweet that he sent out? It said, at least now people can see me playing on TV.
Talking about national TV, which
right.
is true.
Which is true. No, I'm saying it's 100% true. Do you think that there's any amount of shade included in there?
Yeah, a lot.
I agree.
Stephon Gilmore is a really highly rated cornerback prospect coming out of USC.
Yeah.
That would be the South Carolina, not Southern Cal. And, you know, the Bills failed to build a contender around him. They had the top defense in the NFL and completely
but for
dismantled
him to wait,
it in 2 years.
It's a week before the season starts. And it wasn't like he did it after he signed or anything. I don't think that somebody could keep that one held that long for him. And, like, I feel we're giving him too much credit.
You don't think he's smart enough to understand how to send a subtweet?
you remember when Yogi Berra said to, I don't remember who he said it to, but he was talking about the Red Sox and he was about, and he said, oh, we've been kicking their asses forever, it doesn't matter. That's probably what happened. He's been spending enough time around the Patriots now, someone's like,
well,
take a shot at the Bills, they'll never catch us.
Kind of like when you're around DeMarcus Ware and thinking you have that much money, you start
being
around the Patriots, you're like, oh, I'm a winner now.
Do you give him the credit, though, of being like George Costanza, like, and he's waited this long, and this is just jerk store moments, like, you know, like, he's like, I got this one that's going to smoke these guys, like, but he waits 5 months for to do it? I don't think that's how that goes, like.
I think that there's a culture in New England where they're just like, you know, we fucking own Buffalo. Say whatever you want about it.
I think, yeah.
Or maybe someone said something to him on the street. Maybe some idiot in a fucking Tyrod.
So, I mean, like, you know, like...
Somebody, Bills fans, I'm sure, tweet at him because Bills
yeah.
fans are
so
that
So, I mean, if Gillisley tweets out, like, excited to be a big part of the offense, hashtag Patriot Nation, does that mean he's taking a dig that he wasn't a bigger
no.
part of the offense?
No.
But, I mean, I'm saying that's how I get interpreted sometimes. Like, I mean, it's,
maybe by idiot Buffalo fans. They definitely perceive everything as a slight.
Yes.
Everything
yeah.
said about Buffalo.
I agree with that point. But I'm just saying, I think there was a little bit of an edge to
I think we all agree that what Stephon Gilmore said was directly targeted at the Bills, right?
I'm sure that there's, you know, worse things get said all the time, but whether the Bills for them, like, you know, to want to, like, shame him, it's like, appreciate fans like, oh yeah, we enjoyed his time here, and I understand why he would want to leave us for the enemy.
Right, but then he sends that tweet.
We're in agreement here in that Stephon Gilmore took a shot at them, and the fans reacted personally because they have nothing better to do. Right?
Kind of like with the Will, it was a little different with Willis McGahee was going out there talking about how there's nothing to do in Buffalo.
And the women.
There's a team.
That
was how that quote ended.
Point.
Just said,
yeah.
And the women shook his head. That was what sparked Kenny Mayne's thing with Marshawn Lynch and David Busters.
How much the Bills fans hated Marshawn Lynch after Marshawn Lynch leaves and becomes such a huge part of the seal? I love stuff like that.
Bro, they traded Marshawn Lynch.
They didn't make an offer on him. Like, their whole idea going, yeah, we don't want him around anyways. He was a thug, this, that, and the other thing. Then he goes off and runs for 1,500 yards every season, and it's like, okay. Yeah, maybe you can put up with that, because now you have defensive tackles that are bringing guns.
How do you see him performing in Oakland this year?
I think that he and maybe he can do
probably not
limited.
That good.
Poorly. All right.
I would put it this way. As a fantasy football player, I mean, I'm not like huge in it. I won't be looking to have him on my roster.
No, there's certain players every year that I say, whatever happens, I'm not drafting this guy.
He's been that guy for a few years.
Anyone on the Jets, Rob Gronkowski, Marshawn Lynch, Adrian Peterson.
I can see there being, like, you know, a couple, like, you know, I can see in their first game them giving him a carry at the 1 yard line just to get the crowd, like, you know, going on.
Well, I mean, the flip side, the last time we saw Marshawn, he wasn't that good. But he was hurt. If he's healthy and can run, he could play all right.
You know, like a late Tiki kind of thing.
Well, with running backs, it isn't the worst thing in the world for them to take a little bit of year off. But his body's so big, and like the way he runs it, I feel like that, again, like that just has to take such a toll out there. So
he was quick through the hole too, which you didn't get enough credit for. He had a really good burst.
He never really had a crazy carry number, but like from 07 down, it was like 280, 250, 100.
He had a lot of contact. He had more contact.
Yeah, he ran
the
contact. Absolutely.
He read the blocking very well, and then he has that like quick first step.
Gets through the line quick.
In 2015, he had 111 carries, and that was the last time. So he's very, very fresh. But he's also... He's an adult now. He's a grown man. I don't have his age up. But he's,
how many seasons he
32.
Had?
32.
He's been playing since 07.
32, yeah. So, yeah, he's got 8 years in. Yeah, so he's probably in his early 30s. That's not the worst thing. I don't feel like running backs because of the way that job is gone. Like,
31.
We were talking about the old like Larry Johnson from the Chiefs things where he got the ball like 400 times 1 year.
He was huge.
There's, I don't think...
Like 6'4", he's like Brandon Jacobs.
Well, even Brandon Jacobs, like, I feel like with that size of body, it's just tough to sustain. There was apparently a video of Jerome Bettis his last season, and like the day after a game, like he can barely walk upstairs.
That's tough. See, he ran the contest.
Jerome Bettis
is Brandon Jacobs
like 300 pounds.
Brandon Jacobs did not run the contest.
Towards the end, if you look at some of those videos of him, he had to have been 300. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Even though Bettis is the fast Billy Parker year, that whole, yeah.
It would have been so great if Jared Lorenzen was ever his backup.
Dude, he's still playing somewhere for like the Kentucky River Monster or something.
Yeah.
He's still out there.
He is.
There are other great fat players, like Jamarcus Russell is probably 300 pounds.
He was great in high school. He was fat, yeah.
He wasn't even that good in high school. He wasn't even that good in college.
The greatest
he wasn't even projected to be like...
No, he won a starting job. Like he wasn't even going into the season as a starter.
Yeah.
And then he just had one good... He threw it all over. It was LSU.
They won the title that year, right?
No, they didn't. They was in the Sugar Bowl. I don't think it was a title, but they were facing Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was all overrated as usual. And it was LSU's athletes against Notre Dame's fucking athletes, quote unquote. And basically, DeMarcus Russell was just throwing bombs all over the field. And then it became at the combine, like, oh, from his knee, he could throw a football 80 yards.
Now Davis reach.
Yeah, but can he reach? Well, that was all the things Al Davis was going. If he could run fast and if he could throw the football far, let's fucking sign him up.
It was stupid.
His last year at LSU, he had 28 touchdowns, eight picks, 67%.
There was a play that I remember watching a game in fucking early in his career, and it was like some third down play where like they were going, like, see that? They just cut the field in half for him right there, and he had one easy target right there, and they're going, it made it very, very simple for him. We're like, great play call, and I'm going, they're talking about him like he's retarded.
Yeah.
Well.
And then he
did you ever listen to the guy talk?
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
He's probably broke now, right?
He got in trouble with the whole codeine thing. One of my favorite interviews ever is they asked him, like, have you ever taken codeine just to get high? And he's like, I have.
He was huge.
He is huge.
Oh.
Here's the enduring point about Colin Kaepernick. Here's the enduring point. He has the freedom of speech to do what he did, and everyone in the NFL has the freedom to not hire him. So, what killed me about that was, like, the people on First Take were screaming, like, he had the freedom to express himself like they wanted.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but there's no mandate that you have to be, well, so brave, I'm going to hire him.
You
can sit there and be like, what a fuck, and not hire him.
No,
there's
nothing
racist about that. If you don't like it, you don't have to give him a contract.
I understand that, and I'm sure some people do have a view of him that is skewed by racism, but my whole take on it, and this is why I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, because I just have... He probably has the tools to maybe compete for a starting job, but a lot of teams don't see him that way, and giving a... It's like having Tim Tebow. That comparison's been made before, too. Just... I don't know. In the sense that why have a backup quarterback that brings noise with him? If this guy's not going to be starting,
well, the noise with Tebow is that he was a backup who thought he should be starting. The noise with Kaepernick is that he's also disrespecting everything else.
How about the
A lot of backups think they should be starting.
How about the backlash of the comments from Michael Vick saying that he thinks that Kaepernick should get a haircut? Because, I mean, here's the thing. Michael Vick, like, you know, he was in a more laudable position. Like, he was more frowned upon, him being signed, for doing what he did at one point in time. And, yeah, Mike Vick, you know, you change your image. You clean your image up almost a little bit. Like,
I don't know, man.
I think it was a little weird.
Michael
Vick
had dreadlocks.
When he went to Philly, he was with the clean cuts. I don't care what Michael Vick wants to say about anything.
He is an interesting interview when he pops up on random radio stations I'm listening to, though.
It was crazy to me that he thought he was, like, in a position to give him advice. Like, yeah, you committed a felony and, like, went to jail. Like, Colin Kaepernick just has an unpopular opinion. Like, what you did isn't the same thing.
Right.
He was in federal prison. I mean, they definitely threw the book at him, but he was a felon.
That's just still the whole thing about OJ owning prison. Like, that was the clip we were watching yesterday. Like, how
he's in, like, minimum security, right?
Yeah,
Michael
said it's like a cruise ship with barbed wire.
The ass prison.
Like, maybe that's, like, the whole thing. Like, when you're just, like, that much of a crazy person that you just actually want to be like, yeah, let's go to jail so you can be the baddest motherfucker there, too. Like,
So you guys want to get any baseball out of your system here?
Okay, so I definitely want to. Do you really think so?
Go at it.
As of right now, the way things are going, we've had this conversation before. Who do you think we're trending towards with, you know, a week before the trade deadline? Where do you think we're heading for as a World Series? Do you think the Dodgers are actually going to be able to keep this up? They are 31-4 in their last 35 games.
They're good. So my pick for the AL is the Indians. Then you get to the NL. The thing about the Dodgers, they're very good. Same with the Nationals. Same with the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks are the team that no one's talking about and are pretty good.
Their lineup is fucking disgusting now. And, I mean,
they got pitching.
It's not yet. Greinke's kind of not back to being like the Greinke.
Greinke's
having
pretty effective.
Well, I mean, he's not going to have the 1.67 ERA like he had the 1 year again, but
right.
He's back to being a dominant starter where he can throw out there.
True ace.
Honestly, over the years, Kershaw has not pitched well in the Arizona Park. I mean, not that they would pitch there, but maybe it was a game four if they played.
He hasn't pitched well in the playoffs, period.
So, I mean, there becomes that thing. I can't trust the Nationals. I can't trust the Nationals because Dusty fucking Baker.
Right.
I understand that they made some of the old trades.
They got better over the weekend.
Here's the thing I don't like is that they made the problem with them with getting the two good relievers because I don't know who they're going to make the closer out of Doolittle or
Madsen.
It's not a good problem.
It's
not
the lineup.
It's a good problem if you have a manager who knows what he's doing.
I guess so, but I'd rather have a manager, like one guy that might be a closer or three guys that might be a closer and no idea.
But,
that's stupid.
No, but like give him more options. Give him
but
more
Sean
talent.
Sean Little's a lefty and Ryan Madsen's a right.
But then there's
so
the old-fashioned. There's the old-fashioned Dusty Baker thing, though, where he just has his designated guy, my eighth inning guy, my ninth inning guy.
It's like Joe Girardi.
Like, he would never bring Chapman in for four out saves unless he had a gun put to his head, it seemed like.
Well, right. Dusty Baker is, he's not brilliant guy.
Did you see the other day the whole thing I retweeted about the, he, with first base open and two out, he pitched to Mike Trout.
Yeah.
Instead of intentionally walking him, because Albert Pujols was on deck, and he said, well, I've been beaten by Pujols more times.
Right.
I think I saw a typo tweet. I've been beating my Pujols worse than I've been beating my Trout or something like that.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Like that's.
Can you say the same, Bill?
Well, it wouldn't make any sense because Dusty Baker's been managing in the National League for most of the time, and Trout plays in the American League. And yes, once upon a time, he managed in the same division as Albert Pujols. So, that probably
10 years ago, that statement would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah, but right now it's terrible. We have the whole thing with the term of the matchups. Like, the Cardinals have lefties pitchers that Matheny trots out there against lefty hitters, but the problem is that lefties hit them better than righties do.
There's some lefties that are hell for other lefties. There's other lefties that just get smoked. And so the lefties that give people trouble are the ones who are, coming from, the sidearm and, like that Shreve guy from the Yankees. You've seen his windup. He ends up facing right field when he's throwing.
And I feel
same
like
with Chris Sale. He ends up, halfway to first
generally
base.
The lefty pitchers that don't pitch well against lefty batters are the ones that have the only the cut action or the slide action that allow the lefty hitters to kind of extend and reach out.
They see it the whole time. It's breaking up.
Like a guy with a two-seamer or a guy that can kind of play the inside of the plate might have a little bit better. Same arm as the batter, I feel like you're
the
better
best
inside.
The best left-handed relievers pound the inside against lefties.
Same with the righties?
Fucking
righties?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you should live as a pitcher, inside or down.
Comfort zone. It's just not letting you get your hands out there.
Well, coming from a lefty, it takes away one of the most vulnerable hits to a lefty. If a righty throws one down and into a lefty, it's very easy for a lefty to crush it over the wall.
Right.
But if it's coming from a lefty, though, they lose it for just that little bits.
Mm-hmm.
And it also can come in and hit at a different angle, like where it's coming from their body towards them, not coming in on them.
Right.
So it starts tailing away.
If you were to make a chart of where to pitch guys, you'd have inside, 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 outside, or down, down, down.
Down
you'd
and
leave
out.
That little corner right there that was true down and in where you can go.
Well, that's what the pitcher, what Gibson said when he was, throw in on people is because I need to get that outside part of the plate. It's I need to get that out so that I can throw it in a place that you can't hit it, but it's going to be called a strike.
Oh, yeah, buzzing a guy to going inside then outside on guys still effective.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a couple inches back when he lines back up.
I mean, that's the whole thing. A change in on eye level. I mean, it's weird to think that they actually call it now, considering how conservative they are on pitch counts in baseball. But the idea of the waist pitch,
right?
You're gonna throw a ball in the dirt just to fuck up the guy's eye level,
mm-hmm.
and then the next one you're gonna throw on fairly higher, and it's gonna look like a strike.
The boxer setting up with a jab.
It's good sequencing.
Yep, big deal. Play action, football.
But the Diamondbacks, I totally think they're getting their play. I don't know. I mean, the Cubs are starting to play pretty well right now.
I don't see it.
Yeah, their pitching is not that so much there, but the Nationals do have a great team. And when they get Turner, I mean, here's the thing: is the guys they've had filling in for Turner have done pretty terribly. And honestly, even losing
Steven Drew.
I'm not a Steven Drew guy.
Steven Drew is filling in for him right now.
No, there's this guy.
Last night it was Steven Drew.
Yeah.
Last night it was not all the time, but there's this other guy, Wilmer something, I think his name.
No. Steven Drew's been in 50-something games for him.
17 RBIs, I saw.
But there was another guy, Michael Taylor.
He's a center fielder.
Yeah, he's injured right now, too. But now there's Brian Goodwin guys to him. They're pitching Edwin Jackson out there. They're basically saying, we know we're winning the division, we're getting there, but they're basically trying to curve some innings. I mean, because obviously they got a baby Strasburg, but as you mentioned before, Max Scherzer is probably the best pitcher in baseball right now.
Scary guy to think about. If you have to face him twice in a 5-game series,
you see him beating Kershaw twice or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
of
because
course.
Of Kershaw's
he's a far
stigma.
Better postseason pitcher than Kershaw.
Scherzer is just one of those guys. I remember saying it. I saw it at the gym after Aaron Judge won the home run derby. I was going, Scherzer's going to strike him out in his first at bat tomorrow. Because Scherzer's just that kind of crazy. In that at-bat, I was listening to it, I was at work still, but I hear, the pitches for the first batters, and he's pitching 95, and then his first pitch to Judge is a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, and you hear him, grunt, It's like he was going after the big dog, and he likes to do that. And it's amazing again how...
When he hits the upper 90s, he's really reaching back, because he sits around like 94, 95.
But he's just got filthy stuff.
None of his pitches come in straight.
And he's just such a gamer. Like, that was the whole thing. Remember the no-hitter he lost in that game before?
Yeah.
You know, ordinarily, another team's bullpen would have got there and ended up losing the game in general. Because, you know...
It was a 1-0 game, blew it in the ninth.
He's the type of guy, if he's got 120 pitches, you're like, he's still got it, right? Or he's not going to let you take him out. Like, he's wired.
He's like Roy Halladay. The thing about Scherzer is he's demoralizing because of how many strikeouts he racks up. Like, Kershaw's a great pitcher, and Kershaw gets a lot of strikeouts, but Scherzer, like, every start, I feel like, 10 strikeouts, 11 strikeouts. Like, that's demoralizing in a playoff series, where maybe he's out after the sixth because his pitch counts run up, but he struck everyone out.
Well, at that point, you know, at that point, the team has to have shored up their bullpen enough. Like, you get to that point in the game, and
right.
Obviously they had the offense going. Again, I just don't trust them for that reason. But in the AL, it's going to be weird for Houston because, I mean, they are going to be getting a lot of guys back. Maybe, you know, they're getting...
It's got to be the Indians.
Their offense is really, really not performing this year.
No, but it
and
could.
They're, you know, here's the thing, as I always kind of mention this. He's not the greatest player in the world, but Mike Napoli seems to find himself in quite a few World
seems
Series.
Right place, right time, yeah.
He seems to be the
good clubhouse guy.
He seems like he's one of those guys that just, even, you know, he's usually been a contributor on those teams, but he seems like a binding force out there.
Well, he came up as a catcher, you know, former
yeah.
catcher. Catchers just have a good feel for everything. A lot of former catchers become managers.
Well, actually, because they probably have the most, you know, like, intimate, you know, action with multiple players.
I always thought of the catcher as, like, the guy in the clubhouse is maybe, like, the voice of reason. Or, like, just the, like, glue guy.
Absolutely, glue
you
guy.
You know, like, I think of, like, Yadier Molina probably, even though he doesn't speak English, but...
He's
I feel like Jorge was that. I mean...
Nah, they had Jeter as a captain. A catcher's a good pick for a captain.
Very tough.
Yeah. David Ross last year?
David Ross, possibly.
David Ross is getting such a freaking...
Salvador Perez.
It was just a good send-off.
David Ross is getting treated now. Like he's on Dancing with the Stars now,
right.
Or something.
Oh, really? He's
a star? He was a freaking journeyman catcher.
He's coasting
happened,
off of that.
That's what
different.
I'm saying.
He's just having to be a cool guy to hit a home run. Like, big deal.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, like, I mean, it happens. He, like, you know, like... We
capitalized.
You know, would anyone call Scott Brosius a fucking star? He won an MVP.
Ferocious.
He was ferocious.
I mean, but was Scott Brosius getting like cameos on TV shows after that? Or like, you know, like, was his star power really crazy after he won the World Series MVP?
I mean, David Tyree went on tour for like a couple of years after that
He's
catch.
He's in the mental institute now.
Yep.
Well,
he is.
Well, most Giants, people associated with the Giants could argue it could be mental institutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty crazy.
I think because the football fan is the most irrational fan, as I was just discussing earlier when I was going on my anti-Buffalo rants. But
let's stay with baseball.
Yeah.
No, but I was saying that baseball fans are very rational in their
Do you think the Nationals
baseball.
Are done making moves? More importantly, do you think the Red Sox are going to make a bullpen move?
I don't know because there's a lot of people out there like Sonny Gray. People are going to be making hard plays at. Like,
oh yeah.
I don't know who, you
he's
know.
He's been legit over his last 10 starts. He looks like the old Sonny Gray.
And I just really want to see what's going on. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like being a fucking an MLB GM at this time of the year, just based on one day yesterday of me trying to make fantasy baseball trades.
Yeah.
And that's just like a fucking a roto team. Like, okay, cool, I can win a couple bucks out of this. This is like my career could affect the fate of a franchise for a long time. Like,
the trade machine is pretty overwhelming, I feel like.
I believe that the Red Sox will end up trading for Justin Verlander and Justin Wilson from the Tigers.
Baseball is the sport that if you make a bad trade, the fan base will fucking...
With the Red Sox giving up Biggio.
Will destroy anybody.
Like,
you know, like, if you're a Cubs fan, like, I don't even know a Cubs fan that doesn't think that they didn't get just fleeced by the White Sox in that Quintana trade.
You don't know a White Sox fan that doesn't think that?
I think the Cubs won that trade.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Those are low-level prospects.
Elroy Jimenez.
Not a low-level prospect. He was
Elroy
like
Jimenez
number 3 in their system.
Is a top-5 prospect.
Oh, well, I forgot about Elroy, but, you know, so was Jesus Montero once upon a time.
But, I mean...
They also got, what's his name, Rutherford or... Rutherford.
They got Quintana
Yankees.
For 3 years. You give me 3 years of number 2 starter production? Yeah, that's...
There's a way it works
probably
out.
Probably better than Elroy Jimenez's career will end up being.
Maybe.
There's no sure thing.
No, but they've, I feel like, stockpiled their whole process within this the past, what, year or two?
The White Sox have built an amazing – they have 5 out of the top 50 prospects and 8 out of the top 100 right now.
Right, well –
so even if you say it's a 50-50 chance, you just got 4 guys that are going to be everyday players for you, basically.
Possibly.
Like even if it's 50-50, basically, and the whole deal, like
if you get 4 great guys out of this, or
they weren't all for the Quintana trade.
But like, I mean, like, well, that's just the whole with baseball because there's something, you know, you don't know for like 3 or 4 years. Like remember one of the deals that was kind of one of the most talked about at the time was when James Shields got traded for Will Myers.
Yeah.
And that ended up being such an irrelevant deal because neither guy was on either team in so long. But James Shields did help the Royals make a World Series run, I guess you'd say. He wasn't particularly great, but, you know.
He was on the team.
Will Myers
was real active back then.
Will Myers, you know, got injured a bunch of times. Because everyone said, you traded Will Myers. And, yeah, Will Myers turned out to be just a decent player.
You say
so,
the Rays
yeah,
were real active back then?
No, the
Royals.
It was a year after they traded for Zobrist and Cueto at the deadline.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot of deadline deals. They made the World Series both
11-12
the second. No, 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
They're actually playing sneaky good right now.
I know, I've seen it.
Like,
well, Vargas has turned into fucking
that was 2 years
now.
Ago. You're right. Wow.
He's been tailing off just a little bit there, but they got guys that can hit on it. They're just such a pesky, annoying team to play. Because, again, they all hit the ball. They all have high contact rates.
They're a team, too, that they're... Their entire makeup changed over the offseason when fucking Yordano Ventura died. They expected to have him in their rotation. That really throws off a team's long-term
I mean,
short-term
how about draft. That? How about that one? Actually, let me think about this one. How many other sports can you say that three of, like, some of the best young players have fucking
just
died?
Doing stupid shit.
I mean, like, you know, like, football players are dumb, but none of them are, like, the youngest player. Like, you know, you've never heard, like, a top-notch...
Basketball, yeah, Len Bias, and that's...
Yeah, like, you don't have any of these guys, but we've had Jose Fernandez, who was a bona fide star.
Alex Reyes.
You know, Oscar Tavares.
The pitcher for the Angels a couple years ago.
Nick
Gatenhart. Well,
that was
a car accident, I mean, though, it's like...
Corey Lytle flew his plane into a building.
He wasn't
a star by any means, but he was a player.
Thurman Munson.
Yeah, Ventura.
Ventura, Tavares, and Fernandez in a row. Those are all guys who were, like, high-level contributors or expected to be.
I mean, McNair was in the league still when
he died,
right?
First,
no.
Not
that
even
was
league.
That was a couple years after.
I mean, not even from his own doing, but Roberto Clemente died in a plane crash. Like, if any, like, you know,
exactly
famous...
Exactly 3,000 heads.
Like, who... And what other sports have players like that have died under unusual circumstances like that? Like,
while they're playing. No.
It could have been, like, you know, like if we just, like, got the news...
Is baseball cursed?
If we just... I'm kind of weird about that. Like, if you were just here right now, like, just in the middle of them, like, an Andy Dalton fucking shot, you know, or, like, you know, drunk driving accident, kills himself. Like, that would be a huge deal. Like, it would be all over the place.
No, you're right.
But, like, with baseball players, it'd be like, this is, like... Jose Fernandez...
Another baseball player killed himself?
Like,
another baseball player died?
I will say that it was... With most of these guys, not Tavares, that was a drunk driver, right?
Yeah.
But Fernandez and Ventura, both not American, both doing really stupid shit. And, you know, maybe American people don't do as much dumb shit. Well, that's not true, but it was stuff involving motorsports and speed.
Yeah,
like, Ventura was, like, street racing and Fernandez was driving his boat off.
I mean, I remember being a kid, like, there was an incident with, like, two, like, players on the Indians drowning, you know, themselves, or, like, out of boating accidents. Like, football players go on boats like the Vikings did at the Vikings sex party like that. But for some reason, baseball players go on a boat.
I forgot about the Vikings sex
yeah.
party on the
you know,
boat.
I mean, fuck it. It's one of the greatest fuck. They, how there has
not
been a 30-for-30 on that one is beyond
they'll get there.
Beyond
they'll
my
get
mind.
There.
I'll narrate
what if,
it.
What
I'll,
if I told you?
If I could get an interview with Fred Smoot, please. Have you actually, like, read, like, all the files of what happened on that boat?
Probably at one point, but I don't. You know, it's been a long time.
It's one of those things that's just, all the stuff that happened in allegedly a 45-minute window. But again, like, baseball players go out there. It's like, hey, four baseball players go on a boat. Only two of them come back. Like, this kind of thing, it seems like.
Is that a logic problem?
Jose Fernandez. That really bummed me out, man. I liked watching him pitch.
That was like one of those weird ones that hit me where, like, I'll always remember, like, there's certain celebrity deaths. Like, you know, like, obviously some of them get, like, you know, like, over, I don't want to say overblown, but... There's so much you always remember where you were. And Jose Fernandez was one. I remember I woke up and I was on my couch and I was on my phone and I had a girlfriend at the time and she was next to me and I see on the phone and I'm like, Marlins Fernandez, that dead in boating accidents. And I'm like, Marlins Fernandez? I was like, is there another Fernandez other than Jose? Like,
I had him in fantasy and I woke up to 3 texts from people talking shit to me.
There's
a Derrick Rose to the Cavs.
To the Cavs?
Man, they're building such a shitty team.
Let him drink. Why is where Derrick Rose even plays even like you like kind of worthy of that being like? I guess that's it's not like what he signed for.
It'll be the veterans minimum.
You know, like where it's when Otto Porter signed for a couple of things, it's like no one really catches and cares about that. That should be the same treatment that Derrick Rose gets when he goes to at this point. Like
Mariners just traded for David Phelps.
David Phelps
from the Marlins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard that they're looking for a bullpen. I mean, I don't think that they have what it takes to make a run.
Dude, if they think they do, the Rangers must think that they do.
Yeah,
the Rangers were prepared to trade Darvish and Hamels. That changes the whole scope of things. If those two arms are available, if you get Darvish, Hamels, Gray, or Verlander at the deadline, Quintana's already fallen, but...
Well, I'm just curious with, you know, like, the demand's going to be out there. Like, I'm not sure if the Quintana deal, like, you know, kind of skewers, I mean, whatever else is going to get, because that's what the market, you know, will look at.
Right.
As far as prospect-wise, but... I don't know what the Cardinals are doing. I mean, again, there was some talk about they could, they were interested in Stanton, or now Stanton's probably just become unattainable because of the run he's on right now.
He's actually playing well now.
Yeah, but he's leads league in home runs now at this point. They were trying to grab Ozuna, and I think Ozuna is like a perfect type of Cardinal player, like an obscure guy kind of that's actually pretty good.
Yeah. What else were we?
And I think that the Yankees are going to enjoy that trade as much as, you know, they did. I mean, obviously we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but
we're not going to win the World Series.
Well, the whole thing is that, like, you know, the positive of the deal is you lose Tyler Clippard, but the idea that, like, Chase Headley, like, you know, people just in the Yankees hate Chase Headley, that Todd Frazier's going to solve that problem. Todd Frazier sucks,
yeah.
Basically.
And even if you take that part out of the equation,
he's
Yankees
a white
got
Chris Carter.
Pretty much, so plays third base and, like, okay, cool, he's a great clubhouse guy. Like, or, oh, he had his picture taken when he was 12 years old with Derek Jeter. You know, like, no, like, whatever. Like, he's hitting, like, 205.
Right, but even if you take that part out, like, Yankees didn't – pretend the Yankees didn't get Todd Frazier, but they got rid of Tyler Clifford and got these two solid relievers.
That is true, that they get that out of there. But, I mean, well, Robertson, again, the whole infatuation with him is that – oh, he pitched in the Yankee Stadium before, and it's like, look, it'd be like, relievers are so volatile. It's very tough to have an extended career as a good reliever, because eventually, I mean, you only throw so many innings for a year-to-year basis, so for a couple of years, you can be really good, but eventually, you get seen multiple times by hitters, or, like, there's actually, like, you know, like, a book on you, and they lose it. Like, that's what makes a special reliever that good. That's why there's only so many Hall of Fame closers.
If you have, like, four or five relievers, and the more, I know, the less you see somebody, and the more effective they are, the fresher they are.
When I'm in the shower, I often like to think about like a friend, and I think, would you trade their life for like $10 billion? That's how I know where I stand with people.
$10 billion?
Yeah.
That's fucked. Bad boy.
Yeah, I'm sorry guys, I would probably
say you and I don't know each other too well, you can kill me off for $10 billion.
$10 billion?
Yeah, $10 billion. I'd kill that puppy for $10 billion.
Me too. I could get a bunch of you for $10 billion.
Especially the way he keeps biting at me.
I mean, I love him, and I'd probably trade him for $10 billion.
But, like, it's crazy to me. Like, you could probably relate to this as a fantasy baseball player. When you're scouring the waiver wire, and you see, like, you know, like, the names of relief pitchers.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, remember, like, 2 years ago when that guy was lights out? And now you're, like, looking
at Santiago Castilla on my team.
Yeah.
Not when he was lights out. Do you do holds in your league?
No.
Dude, we do them in mine. It's so fucking dumb.
I don't even like having wins or saves in the fucking my leagues anymore, but that's an improvement for everyone leaf pitchers, but they're just
like saves.
Saves such a terrible stat.
I know, but it gives a closer value in fantasy.
It did. I mean, that's the whole thing that makes them play. That's what it basically is. It's a fantasy baseball stat and something that Scott Morris,
you know what, you
probably
could,
invented to fucking make a bunch of money on closers, because
what you could do to make closers still valuable is do WPA.
I mean,
win probability added.
Okay.
It was a good closer, adds a lot of that.
Okay.
Like Zach Britton last year had an insane amount of WPA.
Is there like a multiplier that gets added because it's at a high leverage point of the game? At the end of it, is it like,
yeah,
it's yeah,
the probability of winning.
Oh, so
the game.
Okay.
We had mentioned this before. We were critical saying that Chapman wasn't a top 10 closer. Now I remember seeing an article out that was kind of saying, a Yankee fan saying that the Chapman contract's one of their worst contracts ever signed. Like,
oh, yeah. It's up there with Carlo Pavano. in terms of return on investment.
Kevin Brown?
I don't think we signed him for that much. Yeah, so who... You don't think Chapman's a top 10 closer?
We were talking about that before.
Right. Who's your top 5?
Right
it
now...
It gets hairy after a minute.
I mean, I'm going Jansen over Kimbrel.
Me too.
Right now. Then... See, Andrew Miller...
3 for me is Wade Davis.
Wade Davis is,
so
pitching, is going very well, yes, I would say. I mean, does Miller count in this conversation because of...
No, this is Cody Allen's their closer. We're just talking closers that are used as closers.
Guys that are completely used as closers.
9-inning guy for a team.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be Cody Allen. And
That fucking guy from the Brewers is pretty disgusting.
Knievel?
Yeah, Knievel.
Knievel is good.
When Britton's back, he's obviously going to be up there.
We'll see. He wasn't as good as he was last year before last year. We'll see how good he is when he comes back. But if he's healthy, I agree with you. Where do you stick Michael Lanson?
He's injured now, but he was a great eighth inning guy.
You just had a ton of saves in Pittsburgh there.
Honestly, you know who's been great after a horrible start with Fernando Rodney right now. I mean, we're going based on this year's performance.
He's a Diamondback? No. Where is he now?
He's a Diamondback.
Yeah, you're right.
He had a terrible start, but he's like a stretched out, like
dude,
not giving up like
their
any
bullpen
runs.
Is sneaky good.
The Diamondbacks in general are sneaky good.
Yeah. Dude, I'm telling you, they're my dark horse pick in the NL. I mean, there's only 5 teams to pick from, so whatever. But I would, whatever odds you get on the Diamondbacks to win the World Series right now might be worth a flyer.
You know, who's actually really a good closer right now is Iglesias. Yeah, I think Iglesias is actually a very sneaky, overall good relief pitcher.
Yeah, we haven't named 10 names yet, though, and we're getting to Chapman.
Yeah, I just can't think of guys that actually I've watched enough of to actually speak. Chapman, here's the thing, I watched enough of to kind of not be scared
to know
of him
that
because
he's ineffective.
Well, put it this way, his probability of having a good performance, I mean, he can go out there and strike out all 3 guys and look great.
Right.
1 out of every 10 appearances. But they'll have times where he's putting guys on base, and like you said, once he gets guys on base, he can't throw strikes. And the worst thing you can have as a relief pitcher is a guy that walks people.
Especially as a closer.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than a leadoff walk.
Nope, in the late innings. Diamondbacks are 14-1. In the World Series,
that's intriguing.
It is very intriguing because again, like I just again go back to I don't trust Dusty thing. The Dodgers is always find a way to screw it up.
The Dodgers
will
lose in the first round, I think.
I think whoever comes out of the Central is going to be and the Diamondbacks. Like, they actually saw the huge problem there is that Jake Lamb is not a great hitter. He can't hit lefties, and now by having JD Martinez, they can shuffle the lineup when they have him on there, so they're not having him, you know, potentially being, you know, like. Because he hits cleanup to Goldschmidt, I believe, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have, you know, the whole thing of that.
Is Pollock healthy right now?
Pollock's just coming back, I believe. I think he actually went back on the DL for
some
defense.
Some of those pitchers they have, like Bradley and Godwin and Fernando Rodney and Greinke.
Yeah, Greinke,
like,
yeah.
Guys are pitching well.
Yeah, I mean, even they've got Zach Godley's out there.
Yeah.
Robbie
is it
Ray.
Godley or Godwin?
Zach Godley, because I have him on one of my teams.
I call him Godwin. That's what I was talking about, though.
I mean,
the team's good.
Yeah, David Peralta is a solid player. I mean, their lineup's just very, very deep. There's not a lot of easy outs in there.
Kirk Gibson's still their manager, right?
I don't even know who their manager is anymore. It's one of those things I rarely pay attention to because I don't watch their games in full detail. I just basically know that Mike Matheny's the Cardinals manager, and he drives me crazy.
They'll probably end up playing the Dodgers in the first round. I think they'll beat them.
And then
Diamondbacks?
Yeah.
2-8 in their last 10.
I mean, the Cardinals...
D-backs. That's fine.
The Cardinals have this thing where right now the Brewers are kind of come back to earth and they have a series against the Cubs this weekend where it's like, okay, if you take 2 out of 3 against them, like, you know, suddenly, you know, you're right back in this thing. If you especially beat the Mets today, you're going to go through.
That division's bad.
It's
not good.
It's a lot of teams playing bad baseball. I don't know.
Well, it's also a lot of teams that are in no man's land are rebuilding. Like, the Reds are rebuilding, the Brewers and Pirates are in no man's land. The Cubs are way underperforming than the Cardinals. Cardinals really are in no man's land to me right now.
The thing was with the Cubs is that they so overperformed last year almost.
And the year before, and they made the NLCS as a wild card team.
There are certain things that skew the baseline. But last year, their defense was amazing. This year, their defense is just ordinary. But that amounts for so much as far as, you know, in terms of their record. And everybody had a career season last year. Like, it's just happens.
Zobrist finally showing his age, too. I mean, they have lightning in a bottle. Theo was right to go all in because he won a World Series.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, they did. They, I mean, they still they had such a they still have such a base. I mean, they you know obviously just traded some things to get Quintana, which I just think with the rest of their guys, like Arrieta, I think is freaking kind of done a little bit.
Yeah, he stopped taking the steroids.
And he's going to be a free agent. He's probably going to be there anymore. You know, like Lester, again, you know, it's not shocking that occasionally he, like, you know, Lackey. These are guys that are been pitching them for a long time. It's not crazy for them to all have a bad year after all having a really good year.
No, you're right.
So, and they're experiencing a lot of that. And then, again, Chris Bryant was the MVP last year. He didn't make the All-Star team this year. Like
Chris Bryant, I don't know how good he really is. I think Rizzo's better.
I mean, with Chris Bryant, like Chris Bryant was kind of like the Chicago Aaron Judge thing, because you know the whole deal he was the high this home run king thing, and then spring training he hits freaking you know like all those home runs
yeah.
there, and this whole allure of that. And I mean, he did kind of perform somewhat well at the start, but then in his second year he wins an MVP, they win the World Series. Like it's like you know he kind of has the head that thing.
I'd like to see a little more from him before I anoint him. I think Rizzo's better.
Well, Rizzo's got the more proven track record on there, but yeah, Bryant's...
Rizzo's consistent. Rizzo and Votto are two of the most consistent players in baseball. They both happen to be on El Central first base.
Yes, I mean, well, you know, you
30 home runs, 100 dingers. Or 100 RBIs.
Production.
Every year. Votto's better than Rizzo.
I don't really care about RBIs' numbers. We all go with that.
I don't either, but for the sake of a slash line, or the... You know, the main stuff.
Well, yeah, that's basically was the whole thing, like the Pujols thing when he was at the Cardinals. I think for like 8 or 10 years, he had the 300, 300.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
okay.
30 and 100 is, you know, historical
kind of,
benchmarks.
Well, they kind of go, like, you know, go hand in hand with one another, you know,
right.
kind of thing.
If you got ducks on the pond and you hit 30 home runs, if you're playing behind guys who can get on base 30 home runs, should take you to 100 RBIs. Let's do it.
Well, that was the thing, like, people would have about Teixeira on the Yankees. They'd be like, oh, look, that guy still gets 100 RBIs a year. It's like, so you could be a 250 hitter with that in that Yankees lineup, because if you hit a couple balls over the wall and you're a 250 hitter, you're probably going to drive in 100 runs
right.
when you back clean
yeah,
up to the New York Yankees.
I mean, the only thing an RBI really tells me is that you did get a hit with a guy on base. So
there's a certain. I mean, if you want to go deep into it with you know what your batting average is,
it's not very useful, but
I mean that was the whole thing with the Cardinals the one year when they had this ridiculous batting average with you know runners in scoring position, and everyone was like. What's going on here? It's just like, I don't know. They have guys that have a career of always hitting with runners in scoring position. They're all on the same team. So if you know, if all these guys who have good career records with hitting on runners in scoring position, that means it's more likely there's going to be guys getting hits and
hitting
guys on base with guys that get hits when there's guys
hitting with runners in scoring position is a skill. We can agree on that. You know, the pitchers in the slot and the stretch. There's stuff going on the bases.
High pressure.
Right now, that's what scares me the most about the Red Sox. They cannot hit with runners in scoring position.
The equivalent
they do
of
not
down.
Do it. They don't do it. Without Ortiz, they have no guy who's really... Like, Mookie Betts is good, but he's not good with risk.
He's not... Mookie Betts is going to be the guy that hits 30 home runs a year, but you're never, like, afraid of it at any given at-bat. You just know. You just don't know when it's going to happen. Where, like,
it's
a guy like
Ortiz,
when he gets up, when you're like, oh, shit. I can see this being a double to the wall
Ortiz
right here.
Lived for runners in scoring position in big moments. There's not too many guys in baseball right now that I really feel like live for the spotlight. Maybe Harper and Trout.
Mm.
Are there any closers that get off on being the guy closing the door?
Every closer.
I mean, you have to have that.
It's like being a hockey goalie.
I mean, that was the whole thing with Chapman is that like he was
the Scherzer maybe.
Originally, they just put Chapman in the bullpen just because they didn't really have a spot for him, or they like wasn't sure if they wanted to make a starter. And then he got hooked on being the closer because the feeling of, like, you know, having the special entrance.
Slamming
like,
the door. Being the
A pitcher has
I
to
mean,
be
like,
a lot more wired than a hitter.
I mean, they're basically all Kenny Powers. Like, they're all wired like that. Like, you know, there's their sense of mentality about themselves because, you know, I'm going to blow this motherfucker past you. Like, you know, they all have to be wired like that. And, like, I'm going to go out there and just throw a ball as hard as I can for an inning.
A hitter who fails 70% of the time is considered a good hitter. A pitcher has to succeed between 70 and 80% of the time to be a good pitcher. So, you know, they got to be a little more keyed up. Like, a batter can go up, have a bad at-bat, whatever, fuck it. Pitcher has a bad inning, you get pulled. They have to be more on their game.
If you want to even go deeper than that, as a closer, you have to say that you're probably have to be effective
every
at least
pitch.
95% of the time, because if you... Say you have 30 saves, but you blew three.
Yeah.
People go, oh, well, you know.
It's like 10%. A hockey goal.
Yeah, 90%
save percentage isn't that good.
Like, you're like, okay, that's acceptable, but those are three. Like, you know, the guy who blew the most saves will only have, like, I mean, I guess you kept the job or whatever, but
Right, right.
If you have
to have a high conversion rate.
There's been some times where there's guys out there that put up high save numbers but also blew a bunch of saves where it's like, hey, like, you know, he could have.
Saquano.
Volume scores.
I don't even know what the hell's going on with that anymore. I don't, like, they haven't had an opportunity.
Someone offered me a trade for him in my our league.
I would trade him. I think he's...
All right, let me run this trade by you because I think it's still active.
Because I don't know what's... Matheny's lost his goddamn mind. Like, here's my theory on this one is that he's actually in cahoots with InBev to spike Budweiser sales because every Cardinals fan... You've seen the way I hammer fucking Bud Lights during a Cardinals game. I don't ever feel good. I don't know what the hell this guy's doing.
What do you make of this?
Greg Marquez.
It was so weird. I was like, why do you want Sanjuano and why do I want Marquez?
Well, I mean, yeah, you're better off keeping O on the off chance that he does get saves here and there, or at least becomes one of those relief pitchers that pitches a couple innings a week that you get like a good ERA and whip out of, which has not happened all year with that.
Oh, the only
but,
value.
But that's a starter I don't want. The guy with a fucking 1.4 ERA whip and
the same whip
four
as O. I mean, O does have 18 saves and 38 strikeouts for me.
It's just the whip on there. Like even like a closer with a high whip, anything over one is how stressful he makes your day feel, because that basically means that there's multiple guys.
Since
like,
there's going to be guys on base.
1.4 means that there's quite a few times he's had a few guys on base, which
since,
is nothing worse than the guys on base, because if it's a save opportunity, it means you're up by three. So if there's two guys on base,
something else.
If there's two guys on base, there's any chance there could be a home run hit over the wall that ties this game. And a lot of closers, you don't think there's any chance. Some closers, every pitch they throw, you're going, this guy can hit this one over the wall and tie this game.
Chapman. Since since April 25th, Marquez is 7-3 with a 2.96.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. He's only owned 14%. So I'm assuming what happened here is a guy picked a guy up off the waiver wire and tried to trade him for a closer.
Dude, fantasy basically, I mean, like, we were kind of talking about that yesterday, just the fantasy sports leagues in general, like, you know, whether it be football or baseball, there's always that one guy that when you discuss a trade, like I offered out this trade.
My dad in fantasy football.
It started off as a reasonable trade. I was going, hey, like this is what I'm looking to offer out there. This is who I want. And he sends back this fucking huge deal that I was going to get fleeced on. And I was like, then he tries to defend it. It's like, no, I'm done doing business with you. And then I sent the offer to you, like hoping that I'll accidentally hit like accept on it and go, like, you're the first person I contacted. I want to talk to other people in the league. And long story short, yeah, I'm getting Garrett Cole with a freaking second round pick yesterday versus having to trade two guys that are really good to get fucking Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah.
Like,
but like those guys, I mean, to defend their position, I think that works. You put enough feelers out there. It worked for your dad last year in fantasy, and it's worked for me and other people in fantasy leagues as well.
He doesn't make trades. He plays the waiver wire.
See, I prefer to go that way, but there are the people that just send out. Like, I mean, there are people that play leagues with me for multiple years know not to send me their bullshit. Like, text me before you send me a BS offer. Those are the worst of the guys just sending bullshit offer after bullshit offer to you.
I respond with horrible trade offers and it's bullshit.
And fucking, it's like they're hoping that they know because I drink that I'm actually going to hit accept one day and not be able to, you know, get the trade back.
Drunkenly traded for somebody you shouldn't have. Yeah.
I did that one time. I freaking accidentally dropped a player I didn't mean to drop in a league. And I was like, fuck.
Bruce told me a story about one time he drafted the wrong Adrian Peterson in a
true story. The first year my family did an auction league,
that's what it was.
I put up the wrong Adrian Peterson for value for auction. Someone bid him up to like 50 before they realized it was the one from the Bears.
The third round,
dude. Everyone in my family was like, "What the fuck? Like, why would you do that?" I was like, "Fuck you guys! Like, I'm playing against you to win."
Yeah.
There's the cliche things every draft. Like, it kind of seems like. There was the one year, like, Steve Smith, ooh, which one? You know, because there's, you know, the two Steve Smiths. And
then he blew out his knee, and that was it. That was that.
But, the, you know, there's a couple of, like, I remember that, like, you know, that one commercial, like, the one year TJ Houshmandzadeh was always TJ, who's your mama?
I had a Houshmandzadeh jersey.
He might have actually been the better, I mean, him and Chad Johnson were really fucking
good. Chad Johnson
was
special, man.
They played together in college.
Yeah, no, Houshmandzadeh was like actually the better fantasy option. Like,
Yeah. If you were playing PPR, he was a 110 catch guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the consistent ones where Chad Johnson would have those games, but like it seemed like it was always the same with like Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. Like, yeah, Marvin Harrison was one guy that like, catches, but
Reggie
Wayne was able to consistently get the touchdown and the 10. You know,
there are a lot of teams like that where you'd rather have the second guy in fantasy.
Yeah,
easy add in Rod Smith. You
no, you're going way back on that one. Yeah, absolutely.
That was my first year playing fantasy.
Was Golden Tate that guy for a minute?
Golden Tate, I mean, if you're in PPR, he fucking actually was going to make the stud last year.
No. He wasn't.
He wasn't?
He was very inconsistent 2 years ago. He was
2 years ago.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I drafted him like the fourth round thinking
like,
big things were in play.
That's the whole thing with football, again, like how volatile it is. Like where in other sports, again, you're locked into a guaranteed contract. In football, you can go from being the hot free agent having a great year, and then 2 years later,
you suck
and you can be out of the league. Like, you know?
We're going to start doing our fantasy football preview soon. We can do like position by position, one a week.
Well, good, because I'll need the advice because I...
Yeah, we can bet some ideas around now, but yeah, we should really say... buttoned up, ready, you know, ready
now,
to go.
That'd be one that you guys would be educating me on. I mean, I still do play in two leagues, but it's mostly just for the draft party kind of deal, like the shit.
I play to win. I'm very competitive.
Yeah. We talked a lot before last year's drafts, and we had a lot of the same guys. It was just like,
yeah, hey, you're taking all my guys.
Hush, hush, Mike Evans. No, we were reading the same articles. There was doing the same kind of research, arriving to the same conclusions.
I don't read a ton of articles. I read the Yahoo guys like Brandon Funston.
See, I make the mistake every draft where I'll have a guy targeted, and I'll be like, I hope the guy doesn't take him this round. And I'll like that. I'll gamble on it. I'll be like in the fifth round, and I'll be like,
it's exciting.
I'll be like, let me see if I get him in the sixth round. This guy's still out there.
Yeah.
Let me see.
I take
and then like you see how long
you
can go, and then suddenly it's the ninth round, and you forget haven't drafted the guy yet, and then someone drafted the pick before, and you're like, fuck, I wanted that guy. It's like, well, I had
that's
how many opportunities?
That's my biggest advice to you. Fantasy football is a crapshoot. No one knows anything. Get a list of guys that you value and draft them when you want.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when you draft a guy if he's good. Ryan was going in the 10th round in a lot of drafts last year.
Isn't that kind of
if
like...
If you drafted him in the 3rd round...
Got him in the 8th.
The opportunity cost was high, but the return was high, too.
It is like kind of funny. It's almost not like petty. Like, it almost turns like guys into like, you know, like, into like... Like girl gossiping, where like, you'll talk behind their back, going, "Yo, what was you thinking about that draft pick? That was the worst pick ever." Like, you know, like.
Oh, there's been.
Or you didn't call
Jason Witten in the second round of our.
What did Kevin? Jason Witten.
Jason Witten took
ridiculous.
In the second round.
We were just like, "What the fuck?" I didn't even have him on my board.
No, neither.
That's a big thing. Like realizing the, just getting your guy.
Like.
I draft my sleepers early.
Like you said, I have like three or four guys that I know. Like, say, if I in the first round, there's a range of guys, three or four guys I'm going to take. I'm happy taking any one of them. And honestly, by every time I draft, by the second round, there's another four or five guys that have presented themselves that are in that range. And that, the number only gets bigger because I feel like whether they're doing just ADP, the auto pick, taking someone like Jason Witten, reaching, it's just the number only grows. It's just like, oh, wow, I know.
If you're past the fourth round,
yeah,
that's appropriate to start taking sleepers because everyone has
yeah,
to
that's when the leagues are won because for the most part, the range of variance in that 1 through 40 players is not going to be terribly high, but the range of the players from 40 to 80 is going to be ridiculous where you could get a guy that ends up being a top 40 guy in those picks there, and it doesn't matter when you get them because they come out of nowhere. Like, that's what I was saying. Sometimes, you know, you don't mind losing the first week because you might pick up that running back that you find out is going to be getting 24 carries a game.
Yeah.
And so you're like, wow, he's the red zone back. So I'm going to pick this
Jonathan
guy up
Stewart
here.
Stewart in the fifth round last year. I released him at some point. Fifth round is not too early for your sleepers if you think someone's going to be good.
Right.
Like, I remember getting Arian Foster in his very first year.
I had him that
and
year.
It was one of those things where everyone was so pissed off because they all – Steve Slate was another good one, yes.
Matt Forte was kind
Dominic
of –
Dominic Davis.
But then the next year – But yeah, so Steve Slayton was a guy that ends up being, you know, being like a top 10 you know, fantasy option or whatever like that, like a top 10 pick after being 1 year being a bench player, and then 2 years later, never seen again.
I knew a guy in Texas who was friends with him. I guess he never left Houston.
Interesting.
Well, he went to West Virginia for college, I know.
Yeah. But once he played with the Texans, I guess he just started living there. Said he was cool.
He's not really
that bitter about his career.
Yeah, you would see all the stuff here. I mean, a little bit, I mean, maybe he actually learned a thing or two in West Virginia, which I find hard to believe.
I think that fourth round, I usually don't take them that early, but I think fourth round is about that cutoff when I start allowing myself to look at quarterbacks.
Look, here's my sleeper of the year. Everyone listening to it, you're going to have this free of charge, Pierre Garçon.
Sleeper.
Pierre Garçon will be a top 10 fantasy receiver, and he'll be...
He's the number one receiver in Kyle Shanahan's offense.
Is he still Washington?
No, he's in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Here's my other sleeper, Brian Hoyer.
Who's throwing the ball?
Brian Hoyer.
In
Shanahan's offense.
See, I remember...
I'm with you 100%
He's
on that
played in Shanahan's offense before.
Hoyer's that guy that I wanted to believe could be a guy. And like, I, at least one thing I feel like I won this argument. I remember almost actually coming to blows to the Bills fan. Because they were... They,
or Brian Hoyer.
No, because they were talking up E.J. Manuel so much. And I was like, I'll eventually... And like 5 years
that's
from
disgusting.
Now...
I'm on record as saying I thought E.J. was a good draft pick when they did it.
I was like, 5 years from now, you're going to rather have Brian Hoyer on your team than fucking E.J. Manuel. And
Hoyer's
actually, maybe it's
a
pretty neck and neck race as to who you. I mean, the Bills just win because once you're just sick of somebody, it's just like get it out of here.
It's crazy that Hoyer was so undervalued because the guy after him was undervalued at Michigan State, and now has outperformed the.
And you like that?
Yeah.
I thought he looked good for that Browns team for that little stretch of time there.
That was why he was with Shanahan.
Yeah.
He had a year where
he
threw 3,000 yards, 12 touchdowns, 13 picks. But then he came back in 15 with the Texans. Threw 19 touchdowns, 7 picks. And
but
last year...
He was having a good year.
Last year, 67%, 6 touchdowns, no picks.
He's always going to be judged by his playoff game.
I don't even remember his playoff game.
Down.
Oh, it was like he threw like 4 picks
Hoyer?
In the first half. It was terrible.
It was against the
with,
Chiefs,
with the Texans?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Texans.
Yeah. They got shutouts.
Yeah,
well,
he was. I remember, like, at one point they cut.
Everyone has a bad game.
They cut to DeAndre Hopkins, and he was like, "Get him the fuck out of here!" Basically, saying. So I remember it was so.
Little did he know.
I remember it was so bad. I was actually saying they should bring in Brandon Weeden.
Yo, Whedon's not terrible.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not, dude.
Dude, Brandon Weeden was my favorite quarterback to bet against ever.
Oh, he lost games, but just because of
his
like
completion percentages there.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
He was. He missed that horrible.
All right, so, yeah, with the Browns, he's got a career 57.9% completion percentage.
In this NFL, you'd be minimum 60%.
So the 2 years with the Browns were 57-52. Cowboys, he had a 58-year, 72. And, yeah, he hasn't really played much since the Browns, but in 31 touchdowns, 30 picks.
The
but
Browns
he's a
situation.
Thrower. The Browns is a bad situation.
There's a lot of fumbles, and he takes a lot of sacks, though. I like quarterbacks that they sometimes it's on your line, sometimes it's on you, like...
Andrew Luck takes a lot of sacks.
Well, yeah, because he's, you know, like, he's one of those guys that gets the Brett Favre treatment where he's just trying to make plays, you know? Like, Russell Wilson gets sacked, well, I don't know why, because his offensive line is terrible, and he runs around for his life back there,
yeah,
like... Like, Luck, yeah, sometimes it's because his offensive line isn't that good, but also because, yeah, sometimes he stands back there for way too long and doesn't, you know... He's waiting for T.Y. Hill to get open 30 yards downfield.
Last year's top sack numbers, Tyrod Taylor got sacked 42 times, Andy Dalton 41, same with Luck, Wilson, Carson Palmer's at 40, Matt Ryan.
Tyrod has the problem where nobody on the Bills got open.
Mm-hmm. And the extended plays, that's how those guys...
Yeah, those are kind of like, you know, those are like almost like failed rushing attempts at some points even.
Pretty wild that Ben Roethlisberger only got sacked 17.
Really?
Because
I feel like the Roethlisberger
getting better at not taking sacks.
Well, because he's fucking probably, because he gets older, realizes that I don't really like getting hit that much anymore.
Tom Brady? 15.
Well, he just fucking gets rid of the ball.
There's 39 ranked quarterbacks. He's 35th. Roethlisberger's 31st. Eli's 28th.
Well, Tom Brady's, you know, the greatest quarterback who ever lived.
I believe in myself too, and I hate that there are people that like if you even say that it's like you're insulting everything about you know their knowledge of football. Well,
if you disagree
probably,
with me on that,
people are probably the most irrational about their feelings towards Tom Brady than anybody else.
I don't think so.
Like it's
I
like
know,
like,
I
like
do.
Here's
you know
like with fucking Spygate.
Well, people hate him, yeah.
With Spygate, people look at it as like Tom Brady was the one that told them like that ran the operation or something.
Or like
he was given some information. Hey, if they do this, that means that they're doing that. Okay, so he
dude,
used
every
it.
Team. Geez.
Like
if
what
he
the
went
hell?
Out there and deflated
like,
football.
Yeah, like, he was, you know, like this
there's
whole,
a
like,
website called YourTeamCheats.com.
Yeah, exactly.
With every NFL team and how they've broken the rules.
I feel that they were giving a great mockumentary about the actual deflating the football incident, like of how,
oh,
like,
wow.
How like how an over dramatization about the operation of how it was done,
like a Lonely Island bit. Of, you
what's
know,
crazy to me about that is he did that, and Aaron Rodgers comes out, and he's like, "Yeah, I like my balls overinflated.
Yeah.
Nothing happened." It's
yeah.
like, "Oh, whatever."
He had said that before, like he had all kinds of things like that. It's like,
I will say there is a stretch between the deflate gate and the second half of last year where Rodgers won
but like,
the tank.
For, like, again, like, they're fucking saying, like, again, for 8% of a football, 8% of the air to be taken out of football is basically the same as a guy just fucking shooting up a steroids in the fucking locker room. Like, no, cheating. Like, or, like...
Here's my question.
Well, I mean, what's the biggest extent of cheating you can actually do in a freaking sports? Like, what's the biggest form of cheating you can possibly, like,
I think playing with a flat football would be, especially when you're running the ball, like, there, I mean, I don't think the Patriots, I think there's
the
an
biggest,
argument to be made.
If the ball is completely flat out there and you're trying not to
fumble
it.
They didn't fumble
but
for
we're not
a
talking
year.
About flat football, it's ridiculous.
No,
I mean, I guess, like,
I'm going to answer your question. The biggest cheating thing you can do in a sport is Dr. Hibbs ball.
Vaseline and or
that's true,
pine tar.
Baseball's already hard, yeah, probably.
I mean, there's only so much you can do in a sport without them, like, blowing the whistle and throwing you out. I mean, you get thrown out in baseball. The biggest thing you can do to quote unquote cheat is probably that early.
Well, fudging a scorecard in golf.
That's more extreme.
You get turned in by the people at home.
Yeah.
There are people who watch every hole. That's happened before.
Oh no, it's ridiculous. Like, it's like,
people have gotten like.
Yeah.
That happened to Dustin Johnson.
If you're the
like
kind
recently.
Of, if you're the kind of guy that actually feels the nerve to fucking like, to write into a show or call into something to complain about something like that has no impact on your life,
yeah,
and they
yeah.
actually works for them to change the call, how great of a day is that for you?
It's a big troll moment.
Validating, and it means you're going to be doing what you're doing, taking scores for a lot longer. It's
like that's the
greatest. Encourage that kind of behavior, which is pretty stupid.
So yeah, it's doctrine of baseball.
Not doing baseball, like
how about like just playing dirty in basketball, grabbing, pinching,
you'll get
fouled, elbowing.
You'll get called. That's not really cheating as much as it is
dirty.
Yeah, cheating to me is a deliberate attempt to break the rules
and surreptitious.
It's like premeditated to, you know, like steroids to me is cheating.
And it can't be overt either.
Doctor in the baseball is the be all end all.
I mean, like the thing is that there is a whole like espionage fear in football. So, like, the fact that, like, okay, like, it seems like a lot of people, like, Al Davis was always very paranoid about people, you know, watching. And would also send people out to watch practices, though.
Stealing signs.
Stealing signs is, I feel like,
it's part of the game a little
part
bit.
Part of the game a little bit. But
so was the spitter for a long time.
But that comes with football.
Points.
But this way, in football, people are trying to figure out signs anyways.
It's illegal.
There are people that are just, like, you know, are looking over on the sidelines and trying to figure out what they mean during the game. So, like, okay, like, I'm just saying, like, for Brady, it's like Brady was the one guy that set up this whole operation and fucking actually, you know, he just got some information and used it for a touchdown.
Yeah, we all agree on Brady. Here's a question I have about fantasy. I'm trying to spice up our league this year. We're currently a 10-team league, one quarterback. I'm thinking about making it a 12-team league and or a two-quarterback league.
Two-quarterback league, huh? I don't think the... It can't hurt. I'm always for more, honestly.
Here's the thing. It would shape up the first round because having two good quarterbacks would make your team invaluable. Because, you know, there's not that many big-time fantasy quarterbacks right now. Like, everyone's kind of similar. But if you had, let's say, Rodgers and Derek Carr last year for, like, the weeks they were both going crazy, you would have won your games.
Sure.
So maybe you have to draft a quarterback in the first round.
That and depth.
Here's
the
thing.
The deeper league gets, the more players you have to draft and play, the more you have to know, and it shows who the better players
are. It would just be different.
Are.
Quarterbacks end up being some of the highest scorers, but again, the variance between the top, I mean, like if you're in a two-team league, then it can be into a mad or two-quarterback league.
Yeah.
But if you're just in the one, again, the difference between the guy
that
you get first and tenth is not
if you have the 15th-ranked quarterback, like, well, whatever, I got 20 points from him. You're just like punting on quarterback. Like,
yeah,
I stream quarterback.
You're getting 20 points, whereas the guy with the good guy is getting 30 points. But you can find ways to make up the other 10 points.
That's why I think the two quarterback thing would be good, because it would force you to have at least one high end quarterback. You couldn't punt on quarterback like I did, or else your second one would be atrocious. So maybe quarterbacks start getting drafted.
See, unless a quarterback has like a fucking no touchdowns and a fucking 4 interceptions, they're going to score you points at least.
I think it would normalize things.
Or you can have receivers that get you fucking nothing, almost nothing, or running backs that get you negative points. Or
right.
Like,
it would normalize things back to where they used to be, where you could draft Rodgers in the first round and wasn't considered crazy. And, you know, if you have two team, like, let's say it's a 12-team, two-quarterback league. The top 24 quarterbacks theoretically will be owned.
Well,
probably even more because you'll have a backup.
What makes it more easy, well, actually, what becomes the dick, or not like the smart strategy in the room, is to draft three of them because, let's face it, the, you know, law just says there's going to be at least 8 or 10 guys that lose their jobs for injury or for actually being, you know, like benched and whatnot. Like, so there suddenly becomes that people don't even have a second quarterback out there, or they're going to have to go out there with freaking a backup quarterback.
That's why I think maybe a
two-quarterback
12-man league would be a bit much.
Like you're going out there at Callum Moore and, you
it
know,
could be, but I feel like
10 men.
10
two-quarterbacks.
10 men,
so
two quarterbacks.
Top 20 are gone.
Two running backs, three wide receivers, and a flex.
Yeah, well, and a tight end and a flex.
Defense.
2-3-1-1 defense, kicker. I was thinking about getting rid of kickers.
Yeah. Kickers are just extra icing.
My dad had Justin Tucker last year, and it was like an unfair advantage.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than losing because a guy has a kicker that...
And they're there all year.
Bro, I had the Nick Novak from the...
Chargers?
No, from the Texans.
That's right.
And he ended up being like one of the best kickers of the second half. Because they couldn't score. Every week he'd be kicking like 350 yarders. I was like, yeah, bring it on.
Like, trying to figure out the kicking matchups, always like, if you spend more than 5 minutes looking into a kicking matchup, you really just want to punch yourself in the face because it's just so random. Like, you're like everyone goes, oh, Gostkowski's always safe. Yeah, but Belichick doesn't always have to kick field goals.
Here's
also
the formula
cool,
for
they scored 35 points.
Kicker.
He has 5 points. Like,
this
yeah.
is a good fantasy.
Or, oh, well,
kicker.
Cool, Belichick went for 2 one time. Like,
yeah, he missed
good defense,
out, sure.
bad offense. That's how you get a good fantasy.
I agree.
Kicker.
That's it.
So yeah, they always
the formula. I don't look
always
too much more
get to
it.
Like the 30 or like the 40. Good defense, bad offense. Texans last year, perfect. The Ravens last year, perfect. That's what if you want a good kicker that just looks like a team that's going to have a good offense and a bad or good D and bad O. You get a top 3 kicker for nothing because of what I just told you.